Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law, pound 529 from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network, VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. Ever you've taken us in, we appreciate it. It's Gil Alexander. That is Kelly Bidlin. Still to come this hour, Tyler Shoemaker joins us. I like when Tyler comes on. Talk some WNBA championship series with us. Liberty, Lynx. Tyler's got thoughts on that. He's also got some college football thoughts as well. Jason Weingarten from Under a Cloud of Smoke as well. We will do some of that. A little golf a little later on. You want to talk a little golf?
No, I got a few golf bets.
And teasers coming up momentarily. I just want to I also want to get Kelly's chiming in on NBA season wins. I just want to say this about the you're the Tom Brady news of the day. Seth Wickersham at ESPN reporting. Tom Brady was approved for minority ownership of the Las Vegas Raiders. And ESPN's Seth Wickersham reporting, which I feel is, and then everybody's sort of talking about this morning, like, oh my God, what's this going to do to Tom Brady as a broadcaster? And I just,
we're still being this critical over Tom Brady as a broadcaster?
Here's what Wickersham says. Brady will not be permitted in another team's facility because of the ownership, right? Yeah. This is his stake in the Raiders. He cannot witness team practices. He cannot attend broadcast production meetings, either in person or virtually. He cannot publicly criticize game officials. He cannot publicly criticize other teams. Brady will be subject to the NFL's gambling policy, and he will also be the subject to the NFL's anti-tampering policy. And I just want to file this under, this is the dumbest story of the day, because did anybody, has Tom Brady's brand, if there is a broadcasting brand, has his brand ever been killing other teams? Like, is that what you're looking for from Tom Brady? Like, poignant criticism of other teams?
I mean, no, but as one of, if not the greatest quarterbacks of all time, I would like to hear him criticizing quarterback play and stuff.
He will absolutely tell you what players are supposed, what should have been done. Like, I don't think it rises to that level. I don't think he's unable to say, oh, what you were looking for here was the receiver was supposed to do this. The quarterback was supposed to do this. It was not an A-plus a pass, right? He can say that. He just can't go after people, right? And that's what you're looking for Brady, is that kind of commentary.
I hear what you're saying, and I know that this was all being discussed when the ownership deal was being struck. Now that you've actually read through everything that he can't do, though, it does feel a little ridiculous that he's broadcasting games.
He signed a 10-year, $375 million deal with Fox to broadcast in 2022. $375 million, and what people are pointing out is now, by the minority ownership stake, he's got his $375 million and now has done something that geniusly, in some people's opinions, has now prevented him from doing his job that will earn him $375 million.
Right. Yes. I mean, that's exactly that.
Sorry. Can't criticize. I think it's a lot about nothing.
I've never been a part of a game day broadcast team. Just the idea, though, of him not being able to show up to a production meeting blows my mind. Like, that is, I mean, Gil sets those up every single day here. How could you possibly miss one of those?
Production meeting? I know.
No, like, seriously, for those game day ones, those guys have to be a part of that.
I have perfect attendance at ours. All right.
I want Felica's thoughts on this when we have him on Friday.
Hey, Tom Brady, you're not looking for him to go nuts on somebody. That's not Tom Brady. I just want, like, in a non-Tony Romo kind of way, I want Tom Brady to tell me, you know what? All these other announcers are saying that was just this great genius play by the quarterback. I want Tom Brady to be able to tell me that's an incorrect analysis. The quarterback should have known pre-snap not to have even run that play.
Yeah, this is going to be if people are still criticizing his performance in the booth, this is going to become you got to hold two thoughts in your head at the same time situation with Tom Brady. We're like, you can't be killing the guy if he actually has built in limitations of what he can do.
We're saying two different things, but yes.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay. I still think he's great. I think he's great so far. I know a lot of people haven't thought he's that great so far, but I think he's been wonderful. Okay. Before we get to Caesars, And your favorite NBA season win totals real quick.
Yeah, I went highs and lows here. We talked about this one a while back, but Thunder, I'm in on the over. This team, you had two players that finished top five in defensive EPM, estimated plus minus last season, with them bringing Caruso and Hartenstein over. I think that helps. The perimeter defense that the Thunder are going to be able to put on the court at any time is unlike anything we've seen in the NBA in a while, in my opinion. And now you add some depth with the bigs, with Hartenstein. I think this team is going to be very, very good this year. Best team in the Western Conference to me. I played over 56.5. I played an alt over 59.5 wins at plus 205. I think there is a very good chance we are talking about a 60-plus win team here. Hornets, we already discussed. I'm with JVT on them as well. I think that these pieces, as they continue to grow, we are going to see a very successful Hornets team in the Eastern Conference. I don't know if they're going to be flirting with a playoff spot, Gil, but I think they're going to be in that play-in discussion right there, as long as LaMelo Ball stays healthy. It's all that. And then the Nets. The Nets might not look terrible on paper right now when you look at their depth chart, but they are the perfect example, team, Gil, of, oh man, there's about four pieces on there that teams near the trade deadline will be very, very interested in acquiring to make a championship run. So season might start off okay for them. I think it's going to get real bad as they go into the Cooper Flag sweepstakes here at the end of the season.
Wow. So you and JVT are aligned. You love the Thunder even more than he does, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
You're also over on the Hornets, and you went on the lowest line season win total team. You went under. This is what I was getting at before.
Yeah.
You have under on the Nets at 19.5. Just by comparison, last year, the Wizards ended up 15-67, and the Pistons ended up 14-68. So it certainly wouldn't be unprecedented here in modern day, because there are bad teams. But yeah, that's like, you almost, you have to be so bad to be that bad.
I think they're that bad, Gil.
Yeah.
I think they're going to be that bad. But that's where I loved your question earlier, because usually I'm looking at those, you know, high 20s to kind of mid 40 win totals. Those are the first ones I look at. And last year I was loaded up on a bunch of those alts and did pretty well with them. This year, just not as much love for some of these win totals.
Yeah. I mean, and that's what happened in baseball, where, you know, the last couple of years, people know before Rangers and Padres, and that's right in the middle. But it's the couple years before that, the chasm between the haves and the have-nots grew so dramatically that you could actually, and I only lived on the fringes where I was over on the overs and under on the unders.
Yeah.
So,
and what happens in the NBA and NFL? The draft matters that much, right? Like Cooper Flag out there this year, it is going to encourage some of these bad teams to be very bad.
Which brings us to teaser time in the NFL.
It's teaser time.
There you go. This is our intro. Love Ryan doing that. All right, so you, we have a lot of Wongers.
Ryan's all over the place.
A lot of Wong options here.
Yeah, we do. Starting Thursday night, I'll just roll through these for you, because there's a lot of options this week. Saints catching 2.5, home against the Broncos, okay? Lions, 2.5 at the Vikings. Bills, okay, the 8.5s might be disappearing, but I wanted to put it down there because there are a couple shops still with 8.5 up, and this is like teaser leg of the year number 5 for me, which I think would be like, or like 1-4 so far, or 1-3 so far at best. Commanders laying 7.5 home against Panthers. Chiefs catching 1.5 at the Niners. Steelers catching 1.5 home against the Jets. And Cardinals catching 2.5 home against the Chargers.
Let me define this once again. I shouldn't assume that everybody knows what we're talking about, because there's always new listeners. But Stanford Wong, a pseudonym for John Ferguson, who lived in Southern California, he wrote the book on this, if you will, not just figuratively, but literally as well, where he identified the most profitable, the most plus EV teaser legs betting the National Football League. Home favorites of between 7.5 and 8.5 tees down through the 7 and the 3, and then home and road both favorites and dogs of between 1.5 and 2.5 tees up through the 3 and the 7. Notice that we are not talking about road favorites of between 7.5 and 8.5, just the home favorites of between 7.5 and 8.5. But yes, dogs or favorites between 1.5 and 2.5 teased up through the 3 and the 7. So three different options. These are all total dependent the higher the total, the less those are plus EV. Makes sense, right? The value of every point is that much less. So the lower the totals, the more that this manifests. And obviously with the way that teams play two-point conversions now, there's a little bit of difference as well. But for generally for our purposes, that's what we're talking about. The ability to go through the 7 and the 3 or the 3 and the 7 in the opposite direction for three different legs. That's why all of these qualify. Now, for me, if you're, again, you're asking, what are my two favorites here? Mm-hmm. I can tell you one for sure, and that's the Lions. Teasing the Lions up through the 3 and the 7 against the Vikings, I have the Lions straight, so it only follows that I would have the Lions in a teaser leg. Based on my teaser performance this past season so far, or this entirety of this season thus far, God help you, Detroit Lions, with these teaser legs. But not, the Lions, for me, are the one. You've given me the ability to get through the 3 and the 7 with them at the Vikings. I don't think home field matters, quite frankly. I will do that even without Aiden Hutchinson. What I would pair it with is a little more difficult, but dare I say I would do so with either the Bills or the Commodores. He says cautiously.
Yeah, the Bills.
I will say the Commodores.
Okay. Which I think is completely understandable. They have been great. You expect that game to be a track meet. Can the Commanders just basically win the game? Yeah. I've got a Bills-Lions one already. If I can add to that, I might. I think the other leg that's pretty interesting to me. Like, you and I are on the Niners. I'm just gonna bring it up again.
I was just gonna say this. I would, if you wanted to take the Chiefs, no problem.
How can I possibly blame anybody for wanting to take Patrick Mahomes with over a touchdown?
But as someone who has the Niners, I'm not trying to thread that needle.
No, me either. Me either.
Yeah.
Although I did think about it this morning, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
when we were setting this up, I did think about it. The other team I'm interested in, Gil, this is an injury report one that I'm going to have to monitor. Cardinals at home Monday night catching 2.5. I just don't know if the Chargers can kind of blow them out.
I don't want any part of Saints, Broncos, Steelers, Jets, or Cardinals, Chargers, because any kind of outcome, like if you came back to me and told me that the teams you would naturally tease on got blown out, I would not be shocked. I just wouldn't be. I will come back with Jason Weingarten on the other side. Baseball next.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers game live from Circa. Don't forget to take your betting to the next level by playing the ponies on First Bet. From Santa Anita and Gulfstream Park to the Kentucky Derby and Preakness, First Bet's got you covered. Sign up at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. Use promo code VSiN200 to claim a 20% rebate for your first 60 days, up to $200. Head to firstbet.com today. We get tweets at Beat of the Book. Just want to read a couple here because this one follows up on the JVT segment. Rockette Morton says, where can you find the Suns' alternate win total of 55 plus wins at 7-1? I can't find it. The sort of quick answer is most books have alternate season win totals available now in the NBA, which is, I guess, the last few years.
Yeah.
It's been pretty rampant. But to your question, I guess what you're asking is, because the Suns' season win total is around 47, have you found one that got all the way to 55?
Yeah.
We should probably ask JBT about that.
So, like, if you go, I'm just going to use DraftKings as an example, but most of the East Coast books have it set up this way. You have the win totals, the alt win totals, and then you have the index markets where it's team to win, you know, 20-plus games, 25-plus games, 30-plus games. So you can go.
That's what you're looking for.
On DraftKings, if you go to wins/playoffs, go to win X-plus games, you can go to 55-plus, you'll find the Suns there right now at 6-1.
You are not to be blamed. Some of this is not as easy to find as other stuff.
Oh yeah, not at all.
Primetime Cowboys _ Cubs 1. He says, yo, I'm sorry, but if Joe Ferguson, first of all, John Ferguson, if Joe Ferguson, he says, former Buffalo Bills quarterback, can call his teaser theory Stanford Wong, I shall from here forward have you refer to my tweets as Berkeley Bingers. No meaning, I just want to be difficult and unique. There you go, Primetime. You got it. From now on, it's Berkeley Bingers. Real quick, before we get to Jason Weingarten standing by to talk some baseball with us. So last night I was talking about the Guardians and the Yankees win that game 6-3. The Guardians committed two errors that led directly to Yankees runs right from the first inning. And it kind of, for those of us who had Cleveland last night, it was sort of like it was a tone setter and you're like, oh, we're toast. This is not going to go well. But then later in the game, I mentioned the Yankees committed two blunders on the base pass, which their announcer, John Sterling, and he was doing it. He goes, that's the Yankees. They're like drunks on the base paths, he said yesterday. But Parles, Jeffrey Parlay, Grover Cleveland of producers, producer number 5 and 8, he texts me. He goes, man, what a toot blan. T-O-O-T-B-L-A-N. When I can't remember if he did it after Chisholm or after Rizzo got thrown out on the bases.
Okay.
And I'm like, a toot blan. So I Googled it because I think it's no baseball term I've never heard of. Right. So I Google it. Toot blan.
I would immediately think typo. Too.
No acronym. I knew Parles knew what he was talking about. Thrown out on the bases like a nincompoop. This is a thing. Okay. Which
who's used the word nincompoop in the past like 37 years?
Well, apparently Cubs blogger Tony Jewell did in 2008. He created that term, a toot blan, thrown out on the bases like a nincompoop, which of course then took me down this rabbit hole while this game was dragging along of other baseball ridiculous acronyms that people use, one of which was Noble Tiger. Noble Tiger, no outs, bases loaded, ending with team incapable of getting easy run. And then my personal favorite, Fart Slam. Fielder allows runner to score like a moron. Toot bland last night by the Yankees. Twice, toot blands. Ladies and gentlemen, he's no toot bland. It's Jason Weingarten from under a cloud of smoke, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line, somewhere in Southern Cali, talking some baseball with us. How you doing, Jason?
Pretty good. How's it going?
Very good. Have you heard any of those terms before?
I have. I've heard toot bland before. I mean, that's like a Fangraph thing.
Toot bland?
Yeah.
I was unfamiliar. Jason seems very excited by it all.
Official Fangraph stat.
Yeah. Jason, who you got today? It's the Mets and the Dodgers. The Dodgers are -115 favorites. It's Buehler against Severino, game 3. One of these teams try to take a 2-1 lead.
I bet the Dodgers, probably not particularly surprised there. They were actually -102 overnight. The Mets were a slight favorite. I think it was like -102, -108. And I was like, all right, sure, you can give me the Dodgers as a dog. I'll take it. Well, not as a dog, but, you know,
yeah,
-102. Really weird, you know, sort of reading all the media stuff with the Dodgers. Dodgers are so great, and then they lose one game, and the sky's falling again. I don't necessarily get the idea they had in game 2 to kind of punt, throw all their bad arms, but the 5-game series now, I think the Dodgers are still going to end up in the World Series. I think we get the Dodgers-Yankees matchup that everybody wants to see.
Yeah, so no concerns about Buehler today?
I mean, sure, but he's been pitching for the last couple weeks. You know, regular season, they were preparing him for this situation. He's not a bad pitcher. He's coming off Tommy John. Maybe he's just not 100% yet, but Dodgers are confident to put him in the position. They're not a stupid organization. They don't put players in positions where they can't succeed, especially in playoff games. So, no, I'm not particularly worried.
Yeah, you made it clear last time that you are not a Dodgers fan, but you respect the Dodgers. And one of the things that I thought you was interesting that you brought up off air, because obviously the Dodgers tied this amazing postseason record, 33 straight innings without allowing a run in the postseason. Again, that matched the 1966 Baltimore Orioles for that record. But you were saying that in and of itself is not the most impressive thing about it. What was? Do you remember what you said?
It was that the bullpen management in the Padres series, Dave Roberts didn't have his relievers face the same batter twice the entire series. It sounds unbelievable, but that was some, you know, A-plus management there.
Was it twice or three times?
No, twice. I don't think any position player faced the same Dodgers reliever twice the entire Padres series. Because you can't, you know, you don't get extra looks at a guy if you do that. So it's really beneficial.
Right. And you believe that crime in quotes, would be worse than letting a batter see that pitcher multiple times in the same game, you were saying.
Oh, no, there's the three times through the order penalty that we talk about a lot. You see a lot of reliever, you see a lot of starting pitchers aren't going three times through the order. Now you're getting twice through the order max, you know. But the reality is, if you have a reliever three times in a 5-game series or three times in a 7-game series, seeing a reliever three times is probably worse than the third time through the order penalty.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Okay, just because of the arsenal and their skill level and all that. Okay, so let's move on to these. So you got the Dodgers today. So I'm assuming You know, would you, well, I shouldn't assume, would you play the Dodgers then on the adjusted series price that currently exists, which is right around
like -150 or something?
-155-ish, yeah.
It's a little shorter than the pregame line. I mean, if like you have huge amounts of credit or something and you can play it and you want to play it and get more Dodgers exposure, sure. If you're going to run out and bet it, you know, at the window, not necessarily, you know, depending on the size of your bankroll and how much you, you know, exposure you want to the Dodgers. But I do think Dodgers are going to win. I don't think the series price should be shorter than it was in game one. I really do think Dodgers are the better team here. I just can't wrap my head around why they punted game two like that. But, they're a smart organization.
Yeah, it's shorter for the only reason that instead of being a best of seven, now it's a de facto best of five, right? So that's why it's incrementally shorter in a one-to-one series. What is your thoughts on the ALCS? Again, we don't have a matchup yet for tomorrow. We do, by the way, in the NL. Let's get your thoughts, first of all, since we're still on the Dodgers. Let me get your thoughts on Yamamoto versus Quintana. I would imagine you think that's a big mismatch in favor of the Dodgers.
Yeah, I love Yamamoto. You know, they paid him $300 million. He's an ace. It hasn't been a perfect first season in MLB for him, but he's done well. I think they know his strengths and his limitations, and they'll put him in a position to succeed in game four. Wouldn't surprise me, you know, if Dodgers don't come back with two wins in the next three games, I'd be really surprised.
Do the Guardians have any legit shot, in your opinion?
No. I mean, they're down 2-0. I've watched parts of the first two games. I don't see much there. I'm just, like I told you last week, I think we're really fortunate that we at least got the Guardians in this situation, because as good as the Tigers story has been, as good as the Royals story has been, those teams are completely overmatched in the playoffs, and nobody benefits from watching them, you know, take on the Yankees and get destroyed.
Yeah, this is more of a touchy-feely question than anything quantifiable, but did the Guardians look like the stage was too big for them at Yankee Stadium to you at all?
I don't know. I mean, I think you're seeing the limitations of the trying to get by with less approach in baseball. And you know, sometimes you take a good team against an expensive team, and the team with the money is going to win. Why? Because at the end of the day, they have superstars. They have Aaron Judge. They have Juan Soto. They have Garrett Cole. None of, you know, I guess Jose Ramirez kind of fits in there, but the Guardians brought a knife to a gunfight sort of deal here.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, I disagree with folks. Folks were mad at Stephen Vogt last night for making the move. Bibee only got through four outs in the whole game, and then they had to go to Cade Smith because they had to keep the score limited at that point, and they were able to limit it to 3-0, eventually got it 3-2. So I think he did what he had to do in the moment, managing the game. Let me just ask you this on the way out, 10-second answer. Dodgers Yankees, then give me the final result of that series. How many games in favor of who?
Probably going 6 or 7. I think the Dodgers take it in the end. They're still the best team in baseball. It's going to be hopefully a great World Series. And I'm already saving money for my tickets.
There you go. Saving money for his tickets. Jason Weingarten. Thank you, Jason. Appreciate it. We'll come back.
Good luck.
Tyler Shoemaker on the WNBA and college football next, right here on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Back on A Numbers Game live from Circa, Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin in the hizzy. Before we get to Tyler Shoemaker to talk WNBA and college football, just want to read this one. Tim Lawson points this out to me. Tim Lawson from Better's Life. Nate Silver, founder of 538, which, by the way, we will do some election betting coverage coming up here on the show here in the coming weeks. But also, of course, the founder from a sports betting, or not sports betting, but from a sports analytics standpoint, at Pacoda, among other things, for Major League Baseball hardos, stat heads, nerd balls, whatever you want to call them. Nate Silver chiming in. He says, why are the DC sports franchises so weird? Wizards/Commanders/Nationals/Capitals. All of these brands are punching below their weight, except maybe the Caps. He said, if D.C. had cool sports teams, it would be a radically improved city. It's the worst sports town in America.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, man, you might be right. I hate to say it.
Was that a text to you?
Well, no, this is, yeah, Tim Lawson texting me what Silver tweeted.
Okay.
Yeah, he tweeted this. Listen, we could have this. That's a sports talk radio debate. Who's the worst sports town? Atlanta, I see you. There's a lot that could raise their hand. D.C. has always been a
Miami.
Yeah, D.C. has always been a skins town. It is not a sports town, right? It is not Boston. It is not Philly. It is not New York. It's always been a football town from a professional sports town standpoint. Mm-hmm. Mostly culturally, it's a basketball city. But from a fan standpoint, it's just a skins town. It's never been more than that. The Caps, yes, they won a cup and people went crazy. And there is a sort of, you know, contained passion for that. But it's not really a sports town in the same way. Are they the worst sports town? Might be. As far as like having four major sports represented, yeah, and sucking across the board. Sorry, Commanders. I know you're good now, but I'm just saying.
Well, that's
kind of,
that's why I always bring up Miami too, because it's the, okay, the Dolphins always be, it's a big football town. The Dolphins were big, Marino's around, but the problem is you go to a Dolphins game these days, and if they're playing the Jets, half the stadium's full of Jets fans that are there. Tip the cap of Miami Heat. I think they're the best run organization in South Florida, but it's really hard to compare, or easy to compare them and say that when you compare them to the Marlins and Panthers.
Yeah. And again, I don't want Caps fans coming after me saying, oh, we don't suck. I know you don't suck, but you get the idea of what I'm talking about. Just in terms of collective year to year success,
right,
for those four franchises, it hasn't been good since the Skins were winning three Super Bowls back in the day. Have I mentioned that on this show ever before? ladies and gentlemen, he's a big component of what we do at VSiN.com, big contributor across multi-sports, including the WNBA and, of course, college football. He joins us now, Tyler Shoemaker, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on Twitter at @TShoeIndex. Love that. Going Miami Vice on us once again. You got orange with the blazer on this time. How you doing, Tyler? What's happening, man?
I try to mix it up for you guys. You know, the Ohio State attire I had on last week obviously did not work out. That game did not go as planned. So I thought I'd mix it up a little bit with the orange today.
By the way, what was your reaction to the end of that game? Dan Lanning saying afterwards he did it intentionally, put 12 men on the field in the second to last play. And again, that's sort of something we've talked about on this show many times. Not in that context, but in the sort of, if a team is backed up on their goal line and it's the end of a half, you should just keep committing penalties because the clock goes down. It's considered a live ball foul, so they don't restore the clock. So Dan Lanning puts 12 defenders on the field in the second to last play, what ends up being the second to last play, preventing Ohio State from making a big play. In other words, they're left with 6 seconds, and Will Howard has the late slide, if you will. What did you think about that sequence at the end?
That was tough to watch. I mean, you can't blame Dan Lanning for just playing within the rules. I mean, he found the loophole in the rule. He executed. I thought it was very smart on his part. Now, I would quibble with why that's, you know, part of the rules to begin with. And I think there's been some discussion this week about that with maybe changing that rule. But, you know, it was part of the rules. He worked within the rules. So, you know, you got to tip your cap to him. That was a very smart situational play. I definitely wonder why Ohio State did not try to stop the clock or move a little bit faster there on that last drive. They still had a timeout left. I know they were trying to save that for the potential game winning field goal, but man, that was tough to watch.
And I'm with you on Dan Lanning. I say that not in any way disparagingly. Good for him for sort of exploiting a loophole. I'm all about that for coaches. Again, you want to consider it a live ball foul, then that's what it is, and you can't restore the clock. Okay, let's get to this week in college football. Before we get to your picks, let's talk about the two marquee matchups, and let's start with Alabama and Tennessee. Your thoughts on this one?
This game, I think, has lost a little bit of luster, obviously, from where it might have been 3-4 weeks ago. You know, Alabama was coming off the Georgia win. Everybody's undefeated and feeling good about themselves. And then Tennessee loses to Arkansas. Alabama has another close call with South Carolina. You know, my numbers are right at the market here. I've got Alabama -3. However, I do think I would lean Tennessee here if I had to make a play. I'm not personally betting this one yet. At the current number, but I think I would lean Tennessee here. You know, a lot of the formulas that I look at actually have Tennessee favored here. So, you know, and it is in Knoxville. So I think I would lean Tennessee, but man, this game doesn't quite have as much juice as it once did, because these teams have not looked great here over the last couple of weeks.
Right. Though even with a 12-team playoff, you get your second loss at this point in the season, then it does become a little dicey in theory, one would suspect. What about of course the bigger one, Georgia and Texas?
Yeah, this one I actually do have kind of stronger opinions on. I already bet Texas -3.5 here. My numbers are at 6.5. I think, you know, basically you show me your power number on this game and I'll tell you how much weight you're putting on preseason priors, because if you're looking at what's happened on the field primarily, it's all Texas here. There's nothing that Georgia's done on the field since week one against Clemson that indicates they should be within a touchdown of this Texas team. So I bet Texas -3. I really like the Longhorns here.
You like the Longhorns. Okay. Going with Texas. What else did you bet?
Yeah, I like Memphis, North Texas under 66.5. This is obviously just a numbers play for me. My number is more around 63, and totals that are 64 and above so far in college football this year are going under at about a 64% clip. So, you know, it's just hard for college teams to execute well enough over the course of a game to hit that mark consistently. So from a number standpoint, I really like the under in that game. And then I also like Iowa against Michigan State. I think Iowa, outside of the Ohio State game, their offense has looked much better this year. I mean, even in the loss to Iowa State, where they lost on a 54-yard field goal as time expired, Iowa looked really good this year, and Michigan State just has not. And, you know, one thing that I think you have to factor into a handicap here, Michigan State quarterback Aiden Childs is very turnover prone, particularly in the red zone. So he kills a lot of Michigan State drives by coughing the ball up in the red zone. And Iowa has a very opportunistic defense. So, you know, I think I might try to find some sort of special teams or defensive touchdown prop here for Iowa and, you know, sprinkle something on that.
Okay. Well, let's go to the WNBA. Now, again, this is one of these things that while football, obviously college and pro, go on during the weekend, generally speaking, and then we have the baseball postseason in October during the week, the WNBA sort of gets lost in this. And a lot of the loss that I'm talking about is because ESPN has the WNBA contract. They don't have a football package on Sunday. So they throw the WNBA, you know, a game in Sunday. And so none of us, like the average American sports fan who's betting on other things, it's not even on our radar. So, again, the classic, the sort of unbelievable comeback by the Lynx in game one, take a 1-0 lead in this series. Obviously, referees were involved, according to some people's perspective in that as well. Not according to, and they obviously were involved in controversial ways. But an unbelievable comeback by the Lynx, coming back from 15 points down with 5 minutes left in this game to win it in overtime. The Liberty, though, none of us were watching, right? On Sunday, the game I'm referring to, game two, they come back and even up the best of five championship series at one game apiece. This is the last year where it will be a best of five. Starting next year, the championship will be best of seven. So now they waited till tonight to play game three. Liberty favored by 3.5 on the road at the Target Center in Minnesota. Total 160.5. What are you looking to do here?
Yeah, my numbers are pretty in line with the market here. I've got Liberty -2.5 with a total of 160, so not a ton of value here. I will say one thing that was interesting to me when I dug into this game is the Liberty haven't played in Minnesota since May. All the previous five matchups between these two teams have been in New York. So I think the Minnesota fans will probably be going crazy to have the team at home playing against, you know, arguably the most talented team in the league, in the Liberty, who I have power rated number one. I think if I had to make a play on this game, again, my numbers are very tight with the market, but if I had to make a play, I think I would go with the home team here. I would take the Lynx +3.5. These teams, when you average out the scores of their matchups over the course of this year, it's like Liberty has like a 1 point per game advantage. So these teams are very evenly matched in terms of how they've matched up over the course of this year. I think I would take the 3.5 with the home dog.
All right. And remember, this is a 2-2-1. First two games were in New York. These two, 3 and 4, will be in Minnesota. And game five, if necessary, back in New York, the Liberty and the Lakes. Tyler, thank you so much. Appreciate it, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
At T Shoe Index. That's the letter T, the shoe, what you wear on your foot, index.
Let's go Liberty.
On Twitter. Oh, you're all about it. Kelly Bidlin involved as well. We'll come back, a little golf on the other side, right here on a numbers game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Coming up top of the hour after a numbers game, Money Moves with Stormy Bonatoni. Stormy will be with our buddy Matt Brown today. How about that? Matt Brown is a hizzy. Noon to 2 Eastern, Stormy and Matt on Money Moves, followed by John Hansen on Prop Points. And that will be that will lead into Make It Rain with Adam Schein from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern. Money Moves, Prop Points, Make It Rain, your VSiN schedule here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, coming up at the top of the hour after this little program.
I don't have the exact record in front of me, but Hansen crushed it with props this past weekend.
Did
yeah,
he really?
Oh, yeah, like big time.
Hey, man, we're here to make money.
That's right.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay. Speaking of that, we have, you know, I was mentioning earlier, by the way, Aslan Karatsev does push to a third set against Shevchenko here in the morning. We'll get to our all the best bets on the show here momentarily, but it's a weird time of year for the tennis calendar. It is an equally odd time for the golf calendar.
Yeah. Yeah. This this tournament here in Las Vegas, so I guess means a little bit more to us. I've never been to it. There were plans a year ago, but we went out to this park and did this whole field goal kicking challenge thing. And then I tore a muscle in my calf retrieving a punt.
You did.
And I had to go home instead of go to the golf course.
Was it diagnosed as a tear in the end?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Straight up tear. Straight up tear. Anyway, so Shriners Children's Open here in Las Vegas. This is another birdie fest. We get into this fall swing, and this is you kind of roll your eyes right there, Gil, or something.
You caught that, didn't you?
Yeah, you made a look. This one's about as bad as it gets. We're talking six easiest course on tour.
Do we flirt with 30 here?
We might.
Oh my God.
I mean, it depends on like wind. Yeah. The only time this course has ever played tough is when there's been wind out here, which you can get. We can get in Vegas. There's no doubt about that. And that makes this much tougher. But you're talking massive fairways. When we talk fairway width, massive, huge greens. Some of the biggest that you'll see on tour all season long. I mean, 7,400 square feet is absolutely massive for greens. So it's going to be pretty easy to hit fairways and to hit greens. So it becomes a putting contest a little bit at the end. We have seen different guys off the tee distance, a little bit of a premium here, but because of the fairways being so wide, we've also seen shorter hitters find success too. So you're going to be hot with your irons this week. You got to get hot with the putter. That's who's going to win it. Usually in these events for me, it's just pick a few outrights. Don't get too crazy with a bunch of other bets because these scores can so rapidly change on that final Sunday. You will hear around the green play here is difficult, but here's the thing. We always like to explain this stuff, Gil. If around the green play is difficult, that is something to note. Chipping is very difficult at this course. But if they're going to go 20 under, you can't be missing greens too often to have to be playing around the green. So it's not really something I factor in much of with what I'm looking at stat-wise.
Tom Kim going for the three-peat.
Tom Kim going for the three-peat. He is the short shot here. Absolutely deserves to be that with how he's played this course over the past couple years. Also just the best player in the field right now. I went a little bit further down the board for my plays this week, just three outrights for me. Eric Cole, 35-1. Been a bit of a roller coaster season for Cole. But what he really struggles at, Gil, is the accuracy off the tee. And now you're talking wider fairways, should help his game out there. One of the more class players in the field like him here did finish T3 at this course a season ago. So Eric Cole on 35-1. My boy Cam Davis going back to him at 36-1. I believe I played him last year here as well. He finished T7. Long layoff for Cam, so not exactly positive what we're going to be getting with him, but he's got the game to fit this course very well. So at 36-1 ended up being a play for me. And then I'm back on JJ Spahn. He was a withdrawal a couple weeks ago, which really sucked. I had him then, but then he played in the tournament last week, played pretty well in Utah, T25. Rates out is kind of the best player for me this week. So 45-1. I've seen 50-1s out there this week on him. He is number one on approach. His last 24 rounds played in this field. He is number four in opportunities gains, which are birdie attempts within 15 feet, and fourth in birdies or better, which is just a pure scoring stat. And that's what you're going to have to do this week. So JJ Spahn, Cam Davis, Eric Cole by three outrights for the Shriners Children's Open.
Let's go long shots.
Long shots.
I didn't really roll my eyes, did I? Really?
No. Either way. I thought I saw out of the side of my eye though a face from Gil when I said birdie fest.
I'm like, oh god, one of those.
Another one of those. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, which brings us to our best bets, courtesy of G Bank, right here on A Numbers Game. Always appreciate that we can review these each and every day on the show. G Bank, the official bank of VSiN. Let us begin. Should I begin with my tennis?
Yeah, begin with your tennis.
Martin Fucsovics, who is playing in Antwerp, Belgium on indoor hards, going up against Felix Auger-Aliassime. Or as Kelly asked me on the break, what's Fucsovics' first name? Alejandro? I'm like, no, it's not. It's Martin.
Alejandro. Did I spell it all right?
You spelled it correctly. That's beautiful.
I did Look this with like 20 did. Seconds left in the break. Yeah,
Fucsovics again. I got it plus 197 last night on VSiN.com/picks. Again, all hosts, all guests, all sports, all picks for subscribers at VSiN.com/picks. So we still have Fucsovics to go today. Plus 190 from Belgium. Indoor hard courts. It's that time of year. How about Tyler Shoemaker, who was just on with us? He's on Texas in the big game against Georgia. Texas laying the 3 is where he got it. Memphis in North Texas. He's on the under in that game. 66.5 is where that is lined. And he's on Iowa. Iowa laying 6.
At Michigan State.
Against Michigan State, yes. Okay, JVT came on to talk NBA season win totals with us. He had a bunch of them. Nuggets under 51.5 wins. Hornets over 29.5 wins. Warriors also an over. Love that. Over 43.5 wins. And he took the Suns at 55-plus wins. Did we downgrade from 7-1 to 6-1 here? Is that what
he had 7-1 at 6-1 out there right now.
Okay, yeah. Cool. And then I believe Kelly Bidelon also had some best bets. Did he?
Yeah, just to recap golf real quick. You know, NBA betting guide, check it out, VSiN.com. That's got kind of all my NBA plays in there for the season, as well as most of JVT's, I believe. And just, you know, real quick, Eric Cole, Cameron Davis, JJ Spahn, outright bets for me this week at the Shriners Children's Open.
Oh, I was actually referring to your NBA season wins, but I guess we're not including those.
Thunder, that is Thunder over and an alt over 59.5, Hornets over 29.5, and Nets under 19.
Get the NBA betting guide if you want all the stuff.
That's right.
For the NBA. Again, that is available as well for subscribers. G-Bank, best bets of the day, always brought to you by G-Bank, the official bank of VSiN. The G-Bank Visa Signature Card, your best bet, delivering 1% cashback rewards on eligible gaming transactions and 2% cashback rewards on all other eligible purchases. For more information, head to VSiN.com/G-Bank. That's VSIN.com/G-Bank. Subject credit approval, terms and conditions apply. Did you catch last night? There was a rando college football game, again, watching baseball. Mm-hmm. And Wishnev is, you know, texting about all these random college football games on because he's in-gaming them all. And we were sort of laughing because he's like, Troy's backup is better than their you know, starter. He's going through all this stuff. But Stevie Fezzik, our buddy, who is kind enough to come on Football Fridays with us to talk NFL, you know what he's to the Twitter generation, he's more famous for two things. One, that he's not a very nice person on Twitter. And two, that he is the author of the Purdue minus 4,500.
Right.
Famously, the number one seed that lost to a 16 seed in the first round of the college NCAA tournament a couple years ago. And lost that to, I believe it was Fairleigh Dickinson was the culprit. And the thing about Stevie that I don't know if I'm... I almost have to respect it. Despite that embarrassment, he still leans into this stuff, these heavy money odds.
Yeah.
Right? So, again, he on the one hand, I respect it, right? Maybe it's just that he lacks the gene that would give him any shame in any of this, I guess. I don't know what it is, but last night he had Louisiana Tech. Not quite as big, obviously, as the Purdue money line, but still a hefty money line nonetheless. I want to say it was like minus 450. I might be selling them short
South
on that.
South Alabama?
No, Louisiana Tech was playing New Mexico State, I believe it was, last night.
Oh, there was two games.
There was more than one game last night. And Louisiana Tech ends That's up losing true. It. South Alabama. By the way, I don't know how he lost it, but he ends up losing it in overtime. They had a chance to win it in regulation. I believe the final field goal try was blocked. And New Mexico State ends up winning it in overtime. So Louisiana Tech, another big money line for Stevie, goes down by the wayside. But now he will sit here and say this, right? And this will make most of our listeners, the newer bettors, heads explode. He believes when he's betting those lofty money lines, this is not for everybody. It's certainly not for new time bettors, I would say, for new bettors. But he, from his mathematical actuarial standpoint, believes that those are plus EV bets.
Right.
And so that's why he keeps firing on them. And listen, I don't know why he needs to make them public, but
yeah, I think I would
might want to keep them to himself sometimes when they go down.
I mean, I think a lot of people would struggle psychologically getting past losses like that. But for someone like Steve, where he sees value, he's going to bet value. And it's just, it's a different extremes of where we're talking bettors are at. So no surprise to me that Steve keeps going back to the well with those.
Yeah. All right. Remind everybody, what are your WNBA positions again?
Well, I just bet the series price heavy after that game one loss.
Okay.
So let's go Liberty. Let's go Liberty.
It's all about the Liberty.
Way heavier than I thought.
Let's go Fucevic. If you're a Mets fan, let's go Mets. I know it's been a while for you guys. We've done all we can do. Thanks for listening. Stormy is next with Matt Brown. Money Moves right here at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.